welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Is war the natural condition of the international system? It would appear so. We know genocide is wrong, but it still happens. Many expect another Israeli attack on Iran, but nothing is being done to stop it. Add to that, the EU wants endless war in Ukraine. Crosstalking War, I'm joined by my guest, Angelo Giuliano in Bangkok. He's a political and financial analyst. In Berlin, we have Kavork Almasan. He is founder of Syrian Analysis. And in Rio, we cross to Harrison Berger. He is an independent journalist who has written most recently in The American Conservative and Responsible Statecraft. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Before we talk about the inevitability of war and why we live in this condition today, obviously, we can't overlook the statement that President Donald Trump made on Monday about his so-called Gaza plan. Now, I don't want to spend the whole program on it because, personally, I don't think it warrants spending so much time on it. But I'll go to Kavork in Berlin. I think the most charitable description could be, because there's so it raises more questions than answers, obviously. Calling it Oslo 2.0, which didn't work out too well, is that charitable?
The most important question is, where are the Palestinians from the proposed deal? They received the so-called deal after Trump and Netanyahu discussed in Washington, D.C. And in this case, it is quite clear that the Arab countries, especially the Arab Gulf monarchies, they have taken over this file in cooperation between Doha, Riyadh, and Cairo. And they are talking in the name of the Palestinians in this case. But let's remember that these countries have normalized ties with Israel, and it is in their invested interest to create a situation not only in Palestine, in Syria, in Lebanon, in other places, that the Abraham Accords would be advanced and would be spread in the region. And in this case, I believe that there are several minds in this so-called deal, one of which is, as I mentioned, Palestinians aren't present. The second is the issue of the withdrawal of the Israeli occupation forces from the Gaza Strip. But most importantly, if the Israelis temporarily or in a limited way withdraw, who is going to govern the Gaza Strip? They are asking for the disarmament of Hamas, bringing back the PLO. PLO is already a collaborator with the Israelis. But most importantly, Tony Blair. Tony Blair is the guy who is proposed to lead this process. I think this is really laughable in this case because I don't want to sensationalize the issue, but the place of Tony Blair is definitely in front of The Hague and not to lead a peaceful transition of power in the Gaza Strip. I think this deal will fail, unfortunately, for the Palestinians. And this is what Trump said. And Netanyahu also reaffirmed yesterday that if Hamas rejects this deal, then they will give a carte blanche to Israel to continue the bombardment of Gaza.
Yeah, Angela, I'm glad. I'm not glad, but it's important that Tony Blair's name was mentioned because the country that started this whole mess in the first place, and they want to give it back to a war criminal. It's really quite amazing. There's so little self-awareness in the elite circles these days. Your thoughts on the plan, because as usual, the Palestinians just simply don't have any agency. Nothing has changed, Angelo.
Absolutely. They have no word here. I would say there's a point that it's not much covered, is what is left of Gaza, what is left of Palestine. This is a non-viable state. Now everybody's rushing to declare these two-state solutions. And we all know this is just a mockery of Palestinians. There's one thing that people don't mention enough is the eco-genocide. Gaza right now is unlivable. So you have so much pollution, which is due to the bombing, that it's going to take 30 years to get it back to where it was before. So there's not going to be any agriculture. All the sewage, all the water, the sewage is going to the sea. So basically, fishery, it's over. So basically, what will be left? This is a combined effort. There's the army, there's also the eco-genocide, and the culture, which is completely eradicated. All history of Gaza is completely eradicated. So basically, now we see all those countries very hypocritical. They're all jumping on the two-state solutions. Why is it so? Because they want to whitewash their position as collaborator in this genocide.
Exactly. You know, and Harrison, now we kind of dovetail to what the main point of the program here. Right before the so-called 12-day war, the United States was in direct negotiations with Iran. And then the war started. We had the Hamas delegation in Doha. The Israel attempted to annihilate them. Qatar, a strong ally of the United States. And we can go a little bit back further before the start of the conflict in Ukraine, where Russia proposed two treaties, one to NATO, one to the United States, on how to remap the security architecture of Europe. And they said they got the answer, no. What I'm trying to get at here, even if this plan is real, why would we trust the main actors involved to go through with it? They break their word all the time. They shatter their own plans. A good example is Trump's ceasefire plan. That was derailed as well by the Israelis. So why would we have any hope in the actors that are involved in this to fulfill in a good faith manner their word? Go ahead, Harrison.
Well, there's no reason to believe anything that the administration is saying about these negotiations. You're absolutely correct. And I agree with what the other two guests said as well. It's important to remember exactly what happened, as you said, 2 weeks ago. Hamas was negotiating with the United States, with Israel, and the response of Israel working with the United States and CIA to do it was to bomb Qatar, our very close ally, completely against the United States' interest in service of Israel's interest, and basically commit an act of terrorism there, wiping out the negotiating team. This new plan, as it's called, to solve the Gaza genocide, which is what it is, it's a genocide, has not been brought up with Palestinians at all. They had no say in it whatsoever. Now, this idea that Trump is shifting his position, this is something I've seen a lot, including from a number of colleagues. There's really very little evidence to support it other than these public statements that he's made in the last few days, including his claim that he will not let Benjamin Netanyahu and Israel construct this greater Israel, which has been their goal from the start of October 7th. They used October 7th and exploited it as a basically propaganda weapon to construct this greater Israel that includes Gaza and the West Bank. Now, Benjamin Netanyahu, or Donald Trump, says that he will not let Benjamin Netanyahu annex the West Bank. The problem is that Israel is already doing that in real time. In fact, they've already accomplished most of it in Gaza as well. So we basically have a president now, Trump, who's taking this Joe Biden approach. We're letting Israel do whatever they want. And at the same time, we're leaking to the press and making these public statements about how angry and furious we are about Israel disobeying our wishes. Meanwhile, we can continue to provide them with the unconditional support to do everything that they need to do against U.S. interests.
Yeah, and after the press conference with the Israeli prime minister, which no questions were taken from the media, immediately afterward, Netanyahu said that Israel isn't leaving Gaza. I mean, what kind of theater is this here? Is this Trump making an appeal to his base that is infuriated by Israel's influence over his foreign policy? And it goes back to the Charlie Kirk event as well. I mean, is this just theater?
There is actually definitely a domestic factor in this. 60% of the American people say, according to the newest poll, that Israel has to stop bombing Gaza. And increasing number of Americans, especially in the conservative or among Christian conservative Americans, are opposing the Israeli policies and calling what's happening in Gaza a genocide. And this is a stark, let's say, shift in the public opinion in the United States. And I believe that the reputational damage that Israel has received after October 7 is, unfortunately for them, is not possible to repair. No amount of PR, no amount of hasbara, no amount of money can repair the image of Israel, because people have seen what has happened televised on their outlets. And we can see from the statements of the Israelis that they are not genuine about changing their policies, but they are investing money in buying influencers in the United States, on TikTok, on X, etc. And this is what Benjamin Netanyahu mentioned. But in my opinion, the Netanyahu's statements are so provocative, in my opinion, to the American people, that if I were an American Christian, conservative, or even on the left, I would be truly boiling from inside. And it raises the question why Netanyahu is doing it so blatantly. In the past, they used to hide what they do in the United States. Now they are recording and posting on social media what Netanyahu basically delivers as a message to these influencers and posting it on social media, like as if it is deliberate to create this hatred against Israel or to increase anti-Semitism, because the Israeli Zionists, they thrive on anti-Semitism.
Exactly.
And this is the issue that I'm always thinking about, that they were able to hide all these things. Why would they show to the people unless they want for the people to hate them? And in this case, I think this will blow up in the face of the Israelis sooner or later. And this would be probably the opportunity of Netanyahu to say, look, the entire world is against us, and we have to do what we have to do in order to protect themselves and go to the end in this case. And we know that Israel has lots of options in this case, one of which is the Samson option, and this is not a conspiracy theory. And Israel is sitting on a nuclear weapons, and they could direct this, let's say, the political pressure on Israel onto Iran, and this is the end goal. They aren't done yet with Iran, and they are determined.
Well,
the Israelis pause and then come back later and when the circumstances are better.
Since you brought up Iran, that's what we're going to talk about in the second part of the program. In the meantime, gentlemen, I'm going to jump in. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on why war is inevitable. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing why war is inevitable. Okay, let's go back to Harrison in Rio. The genesis of this program, I was thinking about, you know, as I said in my introduction, we're all anticipating these wars, okay? We're particularly the next assault on Iran, and nothing is being done about it. Everyone is observing. The United States is not intervening to stop it. Obviously, Israel wants it. America will also participate eventually. And we have all this talk in the United Nations warning us about how the deterioration of the international system. And the predicate of that is the lack of international law. And so over the last few months, well, ever since the war in Ukraine started, I've been thinking about how we're returning to great power politics of pre-20th century. It's, you know, great powers, they have their spheres of influence. Now, a lot of people would say that's a realist foreign policy. Well, that is realist, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be peaceful. What are your thoughts on that? Because once you start deleting international law, which the West has effectively done, this is the kind of environment that you have. It's very Darwinian. Go ahead, Harrison.
Yeah, well, I completely agree with that, and it's a very important question that a lot of people are considering right now. I think the Gaza genocide really does play a big role in it. I mean, if you think about it, after World War II, we set up this idea of universal human rights. There was a genocide of Jewish people, the Holocaust, and we determined never to let that happen again, not just to Jewish people, but to any group. Well, immediately after, the United States supported a ton of genocides in Indonesia, all over Latin America. So those policies continued. You know, we took that model of SS death squads. We supported groups like the Contras, which did exactly that. But up until very recently, at least, you know, the United States was going around the world, of course, violating these laws and institutions that it itself had set up after World War II. We were still making these appeals to international law to justify our actions abroad. For instance, in Syria, when we were supporting death squads over there and Al-Qaeda and all sorts of bad groups to overthrow the Assad regime, or sorry, Assad government. That's just reflexive to say that because corporate media has conditioned me so much to do that. But when we did that to overthrow the Assad government, we were making the appeal that we were doing it out of freedom and democracy and making appeals to human rights. But right now we're committing a genocide in Gaza. And when even the most progressive people in the United States, like Bernie Sanders, have been asked about this genocide for the longest time. In fact, up until about 2 weeks ago, he would kind of quarrel with the definition and say, oh, well, you know, I'm not sure if it's a genocide, even though, you know, it's universally accepted by every international institution, including Israeli ones like B'Tselem and Physicians for Human Rights, for a very long time that Israel has been committing a genocide for almost 3 years now. You know, the response of the progressive left, who supposedly take up the mantle of human rights, is to deny that we're participating in that. So we've completely thrown that out the window. Even in the, you know, the Russia Ukraine proxy conflict that we've been supporting, we were making appeals to democracy and human rights. You will very rarely see US officials and even neocons make those appeals anymore. So I think that that's something that's really novel that's developed in the last couple of years.
Yeah, but in what we, you know, Angelo, in Bangkok, I mean, when it gets down to is that these are they're just bad actors in the world. OK, Netanyahu is a bad actor. No, Zionism is an ideology and it's very lethal. And it always points towards genocide ever since the advent of the Israeli state. A creation of the United Nations. So there's always this demonizing of individuals. But they, again, these same people, they don't want to look themselves in the mirror and say, well, what about international law? Because apparently international law just applies to poor countries that can't defend themselves. Angelo.
I think we need to be extremely careful when we point out just one person, Netanyahu, or we point out maybe Zelensky. I think what they want us to see is their version. For them, it's especially when you see Trump and this relationship between Trump and Netanyahu. Trump is somehow is trying to play the good cop and Netanyahu the bad cop. But in reality, this is all a clown show. They're pretending that they have tensions between both, but in reality, they work together. So for Trump, it's useful to have an agent, you know, someone that is doing the dirty works for the U.S. empire. And the same as Zelensky, it's convenient to have Nazis fighting in Ukraine and to have a corrupt person right there that is doing the dirty job on behalf of the U.S. So in reality, we need to be extremely careful. I'm very cautious of not saying, pointing the fingers at Netanyahu or even the far right. The problem is Zionist, and the problem of Zionist is U.S. empire, always. So we need to be extremely careful not to give the fault to Israel and Zionists or Zelensky or far-right movement and so on, because ultimately who's pulling the strings is the U.S. empire.
You know, Kavota, what advantages the United States get out of this here? I mean, there obviously there are people that surround Trump, people that surrounded Biden as well. They don't see a difference between Israel and the United States. They see as one as a continuation of the other. But you know, given the way Iran reacted to the 12-day war, it was Iran that was succeeding. It was Israel that was failing. It was Trump that saved Israel. What makes them think that they can try it again and succeed? Your thoughts?
I just want to follow up to our friend Angelo's thought about Zionism, and that is, I think, when we see what the media calls, for example, the war in Ukraine, they say it is an unprovoked Russian invasion of Ukraine. And they use a similar rhetoric in what's happening in Gaza by saying this is Netanyahu's war. This is not Netanyahu's war. This is Israel's war, this is Zionist war, and this is America's war as well. And the comparison or the difference between Netanyahu and his predecessors is the process and the timing of it. The predecessors also, they have engaged in ethnic cleansing. They have built settlements, but this was a slow ethnic cleansing of the Palestinians. What Netanyahu is doing, it is more blatant, and it's faster, and it's so disgusting to the people that the public opinion is shifting against Israel instead of doing it slowly. Now, what the United States benefits from Israel in the region? Now, the reason why Israel existed geopolitically in the region is divide and conquest. And it exists between the what used to be called the Levant, or still it's the Levant, and in Northern Africa. And when we see the previous empires who passed through this region, they all tried to occupy the shores of the Mediterranean, let's say in Latakia, Tartus, Haifa, Tel Aviv, all the way to Northern Africa, to Egypt, because they had this connectivity between the Levant, or the Middle East, East, West Asia, and Northern Africa. And by doing so, they were able to connect the trade routes and create regional economic power in the region. So by planting Israel in the middle of these two regions, basically you're blocking any possibility for economic integration between these countries. And that is why the Pan-Arabists always said that we have to unite our Arabic countries, but they have focused so much on geographical unity instead of focusing on economic integration. They are focused so much on ideology instead of focusing on bringing, let's say, the people together through education, through ideology, and through different means. So in my opinion, Israel is one of the factors why the region always is in a constant instability. And when it is in a constant instability, this is also an opportunity for the American contractors to sell weapons. And remember, this war is wars and conflicts are only happening in the surrounding areas of Israel. It never happens in Saudi Arabia, in Qatar, in Bahrain, in other places where the Americans already exist. They have military, let's say, bases there. And they have already hijacked the policy making of these countries. For example, Qatar recently, they played the role of the mediator, but they have sold out the Palestinians so quickly this week in this deal that Trump has declared, when Netanyahu came and said, we apologize for this, and Qatar endorsed this deal of Trump. So they sold out Gaza and Palestine to Kushner. They sold out Gaza to Tony Blair in exchange for what? A verbal apology from Netanyahu. And therefore, what I'm trying to say is this region is so wealthy, and it's so important for the U.S. that they cannot allow the rise of any independent power in the region that could bring these powers together, because the conscience and the mindset and the people are thriving for development in the region, right? But this is not possible as long as Israel is in the middle, planted in the middle of this region, and in destabilizing Syria. Why the war happened in Syria? Because of Israel. Why the war happened in Iraq? Because of Israel. So now they are hyper-focused on Egypt, so I'm also fearful that they would come after Egypt
Iran. I would add, I mean, a lot of people think it's an outlier right now. If I were Turkey, I'd be worried too. Harrison, you know, there was a caveat that Trump gave during his Monday news conference that if Hamas doesn't, I'm paraphrasing, of course, Hamas doesn't agree, then the United States would back the United, back Israel and what it's doing. I mean, I think that was probably the most important statement that came out of that, because if it all comes to naught, well, I tried. They're calling it the Trump peace plan. We were going to get Tony Blair involved. We tried, but they're not going to try. And we know what the result is going to be. Harrison.
Well, exactly. And that's even how Benjamin Netanyahu and his cabinet interpreted it. They put out a post in Hebrew language, because what they do is the Israelis like to go on American media and say one thing, but then to Israelis in Hebrew say something completely different. And so addressing his own people, assuming that we don't have Google Translate and can't find out what he's saying, he said, don't worry, we're agreeing to this plan, but we're going to keep IDF troops, Israeli occupation forces in Gaza. And when Hamas doesn't agree to it, because the terms are so ridiculous that there's no reason for them to accept it other than to end the slaughter, which they know it won't. Israel bombs them no matter what, even if they agree to the terms, and kills them on a daily basis. So again, like I don't think there's any reason to believe anything that this administration is saying. I do want to talk about...
I'm sorry, Harris, I'm sorry, just about out of time here, but I'm glad that your last remark is most germane. We have to go on precedent, gentlemen. Have these people kept their word recently? They haven't. Why would they now? Gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Berlin, Bangkok, and in Rio. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, crosstalk rules.